on to case number 2 for the day. And that case is 02-1372, Mark G. Weinberg versus the City of Chicago.
Mr. Overman, you and I seem to be on the same treadmill. But
good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Overman.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. I'm here on behalf of Mark Weinberg. I have nothing scheduled for tomorrow, by the way, Judge Carl.
Neither do I. So okay. We can both be thankful.
So we're still on the same wavelength. Your Honors, this case involves the rather extraordinary absolute prohibition by the City of Chicago of the sale of a book on the public sidewalks outside of the United Center. A sale by a lone individual carrying his book in a knapsack over his shoulder. Let me say at the outset that neither the plaintiff nor the city has uncovered any case in the United States in which such a prohibition has been upheld. Indeed, we could not even find a case where a government had the temerity to litigate such a prohibition.
Mr. Overman, suppose the city altered the ordinance to prohibit all vendors, including newspaper vendors, from selling their wares within 1,000 feet of the United Center. Surely that would be a content-neutral ordinance, would it not?
If it banned everything, mm-hmm. It would be neutral, but it would bear a very heavy burden to be sustained by the city to show why such a blanket prohibition of speech in a public forum. These are sidewalks.
You mean it would overcome one argument and raise another?
Pardon?
I said it would overcome one argument and raise another.
Yeah, it would go way beyond anything the city could try to justify. And the city has never tried to enact such a broad ordinance. Now, the question here, I think, first, we have to confront what test should be applied. If it's not content neutral, of course, the test is strict scrutiny. And there's a powerful argument that this is not content neutral because the city's own excuse or justification of why it permits newspapers or how we distinguish what a newspaper is includes its definition that it's topical. Well, in order to be topical, doesn't the police officer have to read the publication? Under that test, the Jehovah's Witnesses Watchtower tract couldn't pass muster if they were out there selling it for a nickel. It isn't a newspaper. Under that test, what if Mr. Weinberg, his book's only 40,000 words, it's not very big, it could be reprinted in a tabloid newsprint size, the whole book without staples. Could he sell it out there for $13? Would it be topical? Would a police officer have to read it? Actually, the city makes the rather absurd argument.
Of course, Watchtower involves a permitting process that that imposed on the First Amendment rights to engage in anonymous speech, spontaneous speech.
I was actually referring, Your Honor, to the actual publication that the Watchtower Society uses. I was going to address Watchtower as it relates to the facial challenge of the licensing part of this ordinance. If you want me to deal with that now,
that's
different from the 1,000-foot rule.
Okay, go ahead.
So I'd like to come back to that
sure.
in a moment. I was talking about the little publication.
Okay.
That in itself wouldn't pass muster as a newspaper. So I started to say the city says that Mr. Weinberg could cut his book up into chapters, reprint it on newsprint, and he could sell that. Could he sell it for $13 and make change? They don't say, but there's nothing to suggest what the price has to be. And is a police officer going to look at that book, read the chapter, and say, this isn't topical. This talks about what Mr. Wirtz did 10 years ago. It's not content neutral. But let's assume, for sake of discussion, that it is content neutral. The intermediate scrutiny test is then the one that we would apply. And the Ayers court in this decision in this court stated the test, I think, rather clearly, quote, the regulation must not impede communication more than is necessary to achieve the legitimate and compelling public interest behind the regulation. Legitimate and compelling interest. Now, it's the city's burden to justify this regulation. That's well-settled law. What are the facts here? What did the city do to justify this? All we have is that they passed this law in 95. Mr. Weinberg started going out on the sidewalk in 2000. He was out there for 6 weeks before anybody took any action, and the United Center Security people said, get this man out here, and the police stopped the activity. Here's all the evidence in the case. First, the city's 30B6 witness, Ms. Reyes, said, as far as she knows, there's never been a lone bookseller in the city of Chicago anywhere. United Center, downtown, she just doesn't know of any. And the city offered no evidence that there is a problem with lonely booksellers on the streets of Chicago. So when the district court talked about the aggregate of what might happen if we allowed booksellers, Mr. Weinberg is it, so far as the aggregate effect of booksellers in the city. This police officer, Wall, said that in the old days, there were 30 peddlers out there, and it was a lot better when they moved them away, but none of those were booksellers. So that evidence doesn't help us. He also said that it's okay with him if they just move him across the street. That's what he said he'd been asking for. That's only 50 feet, the width of the street. There's no evidence you had to move him 1,000 feet. The United Center security chief, if anybody would know whether there's a problem in selling books, said, I have only one concern. Don't let him stand right in front of gates 2 and 3. He was specifically asked, and if you look at 112.13 of his deposition, was it okay if you moved just west of gates 2 and 3? He said, fine, I have no problem. And he didn't like any vendors. He didn't care whether they were selling books or peanuts or newspapers. He just said, take them out of there. So that evidence is only a few feet from the door, not 1,000 feet. The most important evidence, I think, in the case, and it's in the record, are the two videotapes which were submitted. Because what they show, they were taken for 45 minutes up to game time on the night of a Detroit Red Wings game, one of the biggest attractions to hockey. What they show is a 22-foot-wide sidewalk with people passing back and forth. That sidewalk is never packed. It's never crowded. You could have many booksellers out there. So, and that's the only evidence that's there. And that there's two tapes. One is right in front of the United Center. There's actually Mr. Weinberg there, and there's a person telling the crease right in front of the doors, which Mr. Lamb doesn't like. And it's not a problem. There's another videotape taken at Wood Street, which is just at the end of the block, far closer than 1,000 feet. That corner is virtually empty. You could have booksellers out there and impede nothing at all. So regardless of which test, if that's all the evidence the city has, and that's it, the city can't say that this regulation is necessary to achieve the legitimate interest. The only interest they've offered here, we agree it's a legitimate interest, is moving people on the sidewalk. You can't say you've got to ban books to keep them, to keep the sidewalk moving, given the fact they allow newspapers, they allow the crease, they allow street performers. Somebody could set up a little theater out there on the street. As long as they weren't blocking the sidewalk, that would be okay under the ordinance.
Tell me, is it your contention that the city has to give the exact same First Amendment protection to written materials that are sold as part of a commercial venture as opposed to those that are given away?
The law is quite clear. Ayer said so, and the Supreme Court has said it, that the selling of speech does not diminish the protection. But it's a very important distinction here, Your Honor, and this is not commercial speech. Mr. Weinberg is on a mission. He is not just selling books out there because he's trying to make a profit on books. He has written a scathing attack on the Blackhawks, and he wants to sell that message to the people who go to the Blackhawks game. So he is on as much of a political protest mission.
But he's charging.
Oh, of course, he's charging.
So, I mean,
but it's not like he's selling these real estate advertisements that were the subject of Cincinnati against Discovery Network. It's not commercial speech of that type. But yes, Your Honor, the law is crystal clear that selling that book does not diminish the protection that he's entitled to. And in fact, what the court said in Discovery Network, and I think that's perhaps the most helpful way to analyze what happened here. In Discovery Network, actually, it was pure commercial speech. It was just an advertising circular, which gets a little bit less protection than Mr. Weinberg's book. And the court said, we've got to analyze, is this necessary to serve the legitimate interest? And what they found was, it's not, because there were 1,500 news racks and only 62 commercial people. And they said, if your goal is to avoid clutter, this is a minute addition to the clutter, and you're banning some speech.
Well, but speaking of clutter, I understand that Mr. Weinberg is the only individual out there, you know, with his backpack selling books. But what would the future hold? Would it hold, how can we know what the future would hold? Would it hold hundreds of people with backpacks selling books?
Well,
thousands?
I suppose one way to look at the future, some people say the best way to look at the future is to look at the past. First of all, you can sell books in many places in Chicago. Nobody's ever tried. Secondly, in the Loop, there are now these speech areas. No, there are no booksellers out there. Thirdly, for many years prior to 1995, there was no 1,000-foot ban on any of these stadia. There weren't any booksellers out there. Next, during the 6 weeks or so that Mr. Weinberg was out there, he was still the only bookseller out there. The Ayers Court said, for all we know, I think it dealt exactly, for all we know, that person may be the only T-shirt seller that ever shows up. We're not here to speculate. The city, it's the city's burden. And there is a case on point, and I think it's the concurrence, actually, in Watchtower, Your Honor, where Justice Breyer says, the city can't sustain its burden on speculative evidence that, well, maybe it'll be a problem in the future. If you're going to suppress speech, you've got to bring in a burden. You've got to satisfy your burden.
I mean, you wait till all those people show up before you can complain about it.
Well, I think you have to have some reason to think that there's a problem. And remember, the fact that you're selling a book doesn't insulate you from the general public order laws. So if you had, and of course, wouldn't it be wonderful if you had 100 booksellers out there that people were reading that much? I mean, there's just not that much evidence it's going to happen. But if you had them all blocking the sidewalk, the police have every right to clear a path.
Is it an all or nothing at all? In other words, if the city were willing to change the ordinance to 500 feet, 250 feet, 75 feet.
Anytime you start prohibiting it, the city's got to explain it and justify it. In the Bay Area Peace Navy case, there's far more public safety involved. There you had a regatta of people in boats who were peace advocates. They were prohibited of coming in 225 feet, 75 yards from the Navy brass. And the court said that's too far away. So it depends on the facts of the case. If there were some good reason to say 250 feet, maybe so. But here, it hasn't been shown that that's required. The only other
you know, you're into your rebuttal.
Yes, yeah.
Okay. Just in terms of your topical argument, do you have any evidence that the city enacted the ordinance because of a disagreement with the message?
We don't have any evidence of that, Your Honor, but the Discovery, Cincinnati against Discovery Network specifically dealt with that issue and says it's not required. It's helpful. It's one way to show that they're aimed at the topic, but the law is clear that you don't have to show an animus by the legislature to show that it's not content neutral.
Thank you, Mr. O'Brien. Good morning, Mr. Boxerman.
May it please the court. There's a line of cases beginning at least with Heffron versus International Society for Krishna Consciousness and as recent as Hill versus Colorado, which suggests that a geographically targeted restriction on pedaling in areas that are particularly congested so as to ensure the free flow of pedestrians and the safety of pedestrians is consistent with the First Amendment, even if the pedaling ban affects the sale of expressive materials. This morning, I'll explain why Chicago's ordinance restricting peddling within 1,000 feet of the United Center advances a significant government interest and leaves open alternative channels of communication. On all other issues, I will rest on my brief.
Let me just ask you this. If the city's justification for exempting newspapers, if they involve, you know, a quick sale in which the buyer doesn't browse or haggle or need change, why not exempt other such quick and easy sales, such as those by peanut vendors or cotton candy vendors?
Well, certainly there is nothing prohibiting the city from creating those exemptions, but on the other hand, there's nothing preventing the city from not creating those exemptions. What is important in determining whether or not the ordinance is narrowly tailored to further a significant governmental interest is whether or not the problem that this regulation addresses alleviates that problem in such a way that it would not be alleviated absent the regulation.
And well, what about the newspaper vendors who sell multiple papers or exotic papers or expensive papers? Doesn't that present, you know, pretty much the same browsing problem as a bookseller?
It may. It may not, but certainly may. But in order for this, in order for the ordinance to pass constitutional muster, it does not need to be the least restrictive means of alleviating the problem. It only has to alleviate the problem more so than if it were not actually in, had been enacted and enforced. And here, the ordinance clearly does that. The testimony has been that prior to the enactment of the ordinance in 1995, back when the United Center was first built, and before that when it was the Chicago Stadium, that there were at least 30 peddlers around the United Center, and one of the United Center employees and the police defined the characterized the peddling in the area around there as chaotic. And all the parties and all the witnesses agree that now, once the ordinance had been enacted, the area around the United Center is no longer chaotic, and that the ordinance actually has alleviated the traffic and pedestrian flow and pedestrian safety concerns that the ordinance was enacted to address. It does not need to be the least restrictive means. Ward against Rock versus Raisin clearly says so. So, of course, exemptions could be created, exemptions may not be created, but what's at issue here is whether the ordinance as it stands actually addresses the problem it was designed to address, and it does. Absent this regulation, according to the evidence in the record, the area around the United Center would be more chaotic, there would be much more peddling, and that would be problematic. The pedestrian flow of safety, of course, is a recognized governmental interest, and of course that is what the ordinance is designed to protect. And the ordinance also leaves open plenty of alternative means of communication. Mr. Weinberg, although he wishes to sell a book within 1,000 feet of the United Center, has other means available to him. He could distribute flyers or leaflets within 1,000 feet of the United Center advertising his book. Those leaflets could even have instructions on where to buy the book beyond the 1,000-foot border.
Well, excuse me. You know, you claim that he has no standing to challenge the vagueness of the term newspaper because he acknowledges that career misconduct is indeed a book.
Right.
On the other hand, you're arguing here and in the briefs as well that he could repackage into a newspaper format.
He certainly may.
Isn't he then entitled to a clear definition of newspaper so that he will know how to repackage his message to meet the newspaper exemption?
The newspaper exemption is not vague. Laws rely on words of common meaning and everyday usage, and most people would have a clear idea of what a newspaper is. Now, in our brief, we provide examples of or different criteria that are typical of newspapers. And average people would have a meeting of the minds as to what is a newspaper and what is not a newspaper. While there might be some problems at the fringes, that alone does not render the definition a newspaper invalid. So as the ordinance is written, Mr. Weinberg has very good indication of what will qualify. In fact, it is, the record bears it out in that before Mr. Weinberg opted to sell Career Misconduct, the book Career Misconduct, for several years, Mr. Weinberg was selling a newspaper. It was called the Blue Line in front of the United Center. And even after the ordinance restricting the peddling in front of the United Center was enacted, Mr. Weinberg was able to sell his newspaper, the Blue Line, unmolested in front of the United Center.
Let's say he did repackage again into a newspaper format. Would that really decrease the traffic problem that the city maintains results from pedestrian browsing? I mean, it's not exactly like buying, you know, a Sun-Times. Wouldn't they stop to browse to see what this is about?
Well, people may or people may not. It's admittedly is speculative whether or not they would stop to browse or whether they would not stop to browse. But even if they were stopped to browse, because he is availing himself of that newspaper exemption, that does not render the newspaper exemption or the ordinance invalid. Because again, as Ward makes clear, we do not need to enact the most nearly restrictive means of curtailing this problem, nor do we need to enact an ordinance that addresses all the problems. What is important is that the ordinance alleviates the problem more so than if the ordinance had not been enacted. And clearly it does so, even with the newspaper exemption as it stands.
But I'm not sure that you're addressing the fact that the sale of a publication is a classic, or I should say, on a classic public forum, has always been given, you know, that right has been given great deference. And, you know, this, he may not, I'm not sure that that really, you know, addresses the real problem here.
Well, certainly the sidewalks are public forums.
And the fact that, you know, you've described newspapers as periodical publications which feature primarily topical content. I mean, isn't this really a content-based distinction that we're here about?
Absolutely not. In no way. There is no indication on the record that the ordinance was either enacted or enforced based on the content of any publication or of any sort of message at all. The ordinance is an ordinance of general applicability and applies to the activity of peddling. Its ordinance was not enacted to address any sort of speech, any sort of content, any sort of message. So too with the newspaper exemption. Newspapers could say whatever they wish to say.
Yeah, but you know, there are no limits on the number of newspaper vendors that you are permitting. Swarms of newspaper vendors could appear, and certainly they would impede traffic a lot more than, you know, a lonely fellow with a backpack.
They may, but the record shows still with the ordinance as it stands in its form with the newspaper exemption, the problem of pedestrian traffic and the free flow movement of pedestrians has been ameliorated significantly, and all the witnesses in the case have agreed to that. There is no conflict in the record in any way about that. So the ordinance as it stands with the newspaper exemption has addressed the problem, the significant governmental interest.
Mr. Weinberg, the only man who's, or only person who's ever attempted to sell a publication in violation of the ordinance?
The record indicates that Mr. Weinberg is the only person who has attempted to sell a book within 1,000 feet of the United Center, yes.
What other people have been compelled to go someplace else?
The record doesn't have any indication whatsoever. Mr.
So there may have been other people selling books that were not disturbed?
I'm sorry?
There may have been other people selling books that were not disturbed or...
There's no indication that anybody else was allowed to sell a book besides Mr. Weinberg, and that Mr. Weinberg was in any way targeted for prosecution. And Mr. Weinberg makes no argument to that effect at all.
Did the city keep any record of who was told to move on in their efforts to alleviate the problem?
Not that I'm aware of. The record, again, does not include any evidence as to who or who was not asked to move on. And certainly Mr. Weinberg has never argued that he has been targeted for prosecution, that he was the only...
I'm the only one asking the question. I didn't want him to ask it. I wanted to ask it myself. I want to know who else you were telling to move on.
The record indicates that nobody else was asked to move on or that nobody else was not asked to move on.
And yet the ordinance doesn't ban street performers. It doesn't ban leafleters. It doesn't ban soapbox speakers.
That's correct. It does not. But
wouldn't they have a significant impact on traffic flow?
Well, the record clearly indicates that they have not, because the record indicates that the free flow of pedestrians has been ameliorated significantly after enactment of this ordinance around the United Center. But even if they were to impact the free flow of safety and pedestrians as the ordinance addresses, that does not in any way negate the constitutionality of the ordinance. What matters for the ordinance to be constitutional is that absent the regulation, that it ameliorates the problem it addresses in such a way that absent the regulation, it would not be addressed.
What about the fact that the ordinance has no date or time limitations tied to events at the United Center?
It certainly does not. And Mr. Weinberg has at no point argued that the ordinance is overbroad based on those grounds. And because that argument was never made, there's no evidence to show one way or another whether it actually is addressed, that it is actually enforced at non-event times or only event times. But the fact that it does not include any limitation that way makes the ordinance very easy to enforce. It provides a bright line. It is very, very clear for everybody to know what is prohibited and what is not prohibited, and providing a bright line is quite workable that way.
What, by the way, what are the boundaries on the city's discretion to issue permits?
I don't understand the question. Regarding the general peddling application?
I'm thinking about, you know, the facial challenge here. Yes.
Well, certainly if the ordinance, as it reads, provides no basis by which permits are issued or denied. Permits are customarily permitted and granted. There's no evidence in the record to show that they are not. Mr. Weinberg never applied for a permit.
No, I understand, but I'm just thinking about, I'm just sitting here and thinking about the district court finding that the permit process gave too much discretion to the city.
Well, the district court also determined that there was an insufficient nexus between the permitting process and the targeting or censorship of any sort of speech, because the permit process applies to a general activity that is peddling. It in no way addresses any particular expressive conduct. And because it is an ordinance that addresses a general activity, not speech, not a targeted speech, there is an insufficient nexus to use the ordinance, the peddling licensing ordinance, as a means of censorship. I believe the district court found it was too blunt of a weapon. And clearly it is borne out by the record. Certainly that is true. But even if Mr. Weinberg, even if the peddling ordinance were to be invalid, that would not help Mr. Weinberg, because the peddling ordinance addressing the United Center forbids peddling around the United Center within 1,000 feet of the United Center, regardless of whether one has a permit for peddling or not. It restricts peddling without any reference to a peddling permit. The only reference to a peddling permit that the anti-peddling ordinance around the United Center mentions is an exception for people who are able to get the permission of private property owners to peddle within 1,000 feet. They must have a peddling license. But the peddling ban around the United Center on the public way, as Mr. Weinberg was attempting to do.
So what would happen if he could talk one of the parking lot owners into allowing him to sell on the parking lot?
If he were to obtain a peddling license, and he were to be able to convince a private property owner, and assuming that the parking lot is private property, then he would be able to peddle there, absolutely, within 1,000 feet. And this brings up another...
You paused on the threshold of something. Is the parking lot private property? Is the parking lot private property or not?
The parking lot is United Center property, which is private property.
Enlighten me. Is that private property?
Yes.
Good.
And that also brings me up to the 1,000 point distance as far as how that was chosen and why it is near the Taylor Center, the 1,000 foot radius. The record indicates...
That's like a fifth of a mile, isn't it?
Yes. But the record makes clear that the overwhelming majority of the parking lots and the entrances to the United Center and where the pedestrians and visitors come into the United Center are located within the 1,000 foot radius. Not all the parking lots, but the majority of the parking lots. So the 1,000 foot radius is an area that actually encompasses the majority, but not all, of the area that would be most crowded when events are actually being held at the United Center. I see that I'm out of time. I would ask that the judgment of the district court be affirmed. Thank you.
Mr. Boxerman.
Thank you.
Mr. Overman, how much time?
3 minutes.
Your Honor, let me start off by saying I committed a cardinal sin. I didn't get back to the question you asked me, but you asked about the facial challenge, and so let me comment on that quickly. The Watchtower against Stratton case that just came down in June makes it clear that ordinance is virtually identical, except it relates to door-to-door. It relates to all peddlers. The facial challenge was upheld there as it applied to the peddling of the Watchtower brochure. So that's ended the discussion, I think, in terms of whether we can and properly have made a facial challenge. But let me just go back to this question of the city's showing. I think the best evidence, that's why I focused on, is that videotape. That shows what the crowds are like, and they're not very congested. That's the city's only legitimate interest, is congestion. When they say, and not one witness The city's lawyer said, well, the evidence was that there were problems there in that the witnesses talked about the congestion. Not one witness supported the necessity of moving people 1,000 feet away. Nobody said that at all. In fact, all they did say is that nobody gets to the United Center outside of 1,000 feet. So what they're really doing is making our case, because they've completely removed Mr. Weinberg from his audience. And that was exactly the problem in Ayers. In Ayers, this court said, well, maybe you could ban her from Grant Park, but you can't keep her from getting to the people who are on their way into Grant Park. That was the problem. Now, the only evidence here is that a very small limitation from the front door is all that's needed. In answer, Judge Bauer, to your question about what other kinds of people were moved along, we get a little bit of help, not a lot, from Officer Walls, who says that it was not booksellers and it was not speech peddlers. It was peanut people, Hawks hats, and those were the peddlers they moved away. And nobody's here arguing their case. They're selling a commercial product. They're not peddling speech. This is core First Amendment activity. Selling the written word in a traditional public forum. It gets the most protection under the First Amendment that we can provide. And the Supreme Court has said many times, and this court has said many times, the government wants to ban that speech, it's got to come in here and show not just that it was the least restrictive, that's not that it's that they're not required to go the least restrictive. The other part of that test is they can't ban more than is necessary. That's what the Ayers court said. And they clearly have banned way more than is necessary. When you look at that videotape, no one could, I think, come to any other conclusion.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you both, Mr. Oberman and Mr. Bosterman, for such fine briefs and for such well-argued case. Thank you. Thank you. And we'll take the case under advisement. And